11th, 2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1@yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by going to Spingola.chatango.com. Now, there's been a very interesting New York Times article dated October 6, 1940, that has been making its way around the Internet. And I did make a transcription of it, a written transcription of this article. But the name of the article is entitled New World Order Pledged to Jews. Now, keep in mind that this date was October 6, 1940, and this was before the United States entered the war in 1941. Arthur Greenwood, deputy leader of the British Labour Party and member of the British War Cabinet, assured the Jews living in the United States that following the Allied victory, people would direct all of their efforts to found a new world order based on the ideals of justice and peace. Mr. Greenwood said, and I quote, "The British government sought again to secure some amelioration of the lot of persecuted Jewry, both in Germany itself and in the countries which were infected by the Nazi doctrine of racial hatred. Today, the same sinister power which has trampled on its own defenseless minorities and by fraud and force has temporarily robbed many small peoples of their independence, we has challenged the last stronghold of liberty in Europe." Continuing, Mr. Greenwood said, "When we have achieved victory, as we assuredly shall, the nations will have the opportunity of establishing a new world order based on the ideals of justice and peace. In such a world, it is our confident hope that the conscience of civilized humanity would demand that the wrongs suffered by the Jewish people in so many countries should be righted." Now, when, unquote. Now, when I was reading through this, I thought, ah, that sounds really familiar. On September 11th, 1991, just 10 years before the dreaded 9/11, President George H.W. Bush, in his State of the Union address, said, okay, I'm going to have the board operator play a clip for you. Listen carefully. It's very interesting. Sounds just like what Mr. Greenwood said. Got that clip ready?
Of its founders.
"We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders."
Okay, thank you. The United Nations Charter was signed June 26, 1945. It took effect on October 24, 1945, and it sounded just exactly what Mr. Greenwood said. "When we have achieved victory, as we assuredly shall." Okay, be right back. Welcome back. Our guest, the first part of the program, is Virginia Gunther. And if you listen to the commercials, the first commercial talked about something that she's going to talk about today, and that is RNA drops. Her website is rna.freebottle.com. Virginia, welcome to the program.
Hi, well, thank you. And it's rnafreesample.com, rnafreesample.com. That's all right.
Oh,
good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. And you?
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, the commercial said free bottle. So that I knew that I had freesample.com written down, and then the commercial said freebottle.com. So I was a little confusing. So, but it is free sample, and that's the website that I have open. So you might want to check the commercial and see, make sure it has the right website.
Right. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Sorry about that. Anyway, good morning. Good morning. Always kind of fun doing internet radio and talking to people about products and new technologies. Always come across all kinds of interesting opportunities and glitches. But yes, RNA Free Sample is the product website, and very grateful to be on your show today. I love talking about the product. I love talking about my journey of discovery, and I love introducing the premise to people because it's a new and interesting idea.
Okay, well, what's it got in it, and what is it supposed to do for people who take it?
Okay, let me start by saying, Deanna, I loved your show. I love listening to your show. I love how specific you are in your language, and when you interact with your guests, you're really good about dialing into what it is that they're saying and where their experience is coming from, and how you always give value and validation to other people and the premise that they're operating from. So I really appreciate that as a person who's had a unique, interesting journey to get to the product that I want to talk about. And I somewhat consider myself a quasi-expert, an unofficial expert in the human condition. I was a corporate executive for many years, and at 33 years old, I felt the calling or a tug to go into ministry. And it was a very unique choice for myself because I was not raised in a religious background at all. I had no conditioning or no training whatsoever in the Bible or really any understanding of what it would be involved in doing ministry. But I had kind of a Walden Pond experience. I spent the year on a side of a lake studying the Bible, and I felt in my heart that I was called to serve the poor. And so I did what the words of Jesus in the Bible told me to do, which was to forsake everything and become a disciple and follow him. And I felt, again, my calling into the poor. So I sold all my goods, all my worldly possessions, of which I had many, and I went into urban ministry in the inner city of Indianapolis, Indiana. And in that time, I tried to manifest what I felt would be, you know, the power of God according to what the Bible says. I know there's all kinds of people of all kinds of faith that use all kinds of different techniques to realize their human potential or their divine nature, if they believe in that. Some people don't. That's okay, too. But this is just my particular path. And in the process of that, I felt, you know, I was face-to-face with the human condition every day. And my home was an outreach ministry. I did ministry out of my home in a pantry-style fashion. I took in children and women, all kinds of stuff. And not only was there a human condition in me where I felt limited and restricted and sometimes very vulnerable and powerless, but there was also a human condition that I was facing every day. So I did this for many years, and I got really frustrated with a lot of different aspects. We could talk about the corporate aspect of public ministry, and then I could talk about my private aspect of my ministry and my attempt to discover this divine nature or this human potential. So after a while, I just said, I can't do it anymore. And I guess probably part of it, too, was that I had a very high-functioning life in the corporate world. And so I knew what the potential, you know, there was more. So I kept going and exploring. And one of the things that I started to look at was genetics, mind, body, energy, nutrition, genetics, environment, how they all interplayed. And I studied a lot about the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton and his teachings on the biology of perception, biology of belief. And I read Dawson Church's work on epigenetics. And it really clicked with me. I thought, there's something to this. I understand there is an environment that we're in that's maybe the hidden ground of some of our behaviors and our attitudes. So the more I start to explore that, the more it starts to make sense to me. And in 2010, as still part of my spiritual quest and my epic journey, I ran into Dr. Carolyn Dean and her involvement with what was at that time called the D-cell. And it was a cellular technology to basically try to harness life force energy and bring it forward. And she had just perfected this formula that she'd been working for about 40 years. And it turned out being the I-cell, which is at the foundation of the RNA drops. And it was a completion for me of all of my work in ministry. I did large group awareness trainings. I am a certified personal coach. I did personal coaching for many years. So when I realized that the I-cell, which is at the foundation of the RNA drops, actually communicate new information to the RNA, the environment that your genetic material swims in, and starts to organize that into a coherency and produce power, latent power within every single cell, and that has top to bottom implications for health, well-being, mind function, everything, I threw in 100% and really dove into expressing this and sharing this as a product and a precept with the public.
Interesting. Well, I've had Dr. Carolyn Dean on the program, and I have heard of this product. I've never used it. I know somebody who has, who speaks very highly of it. And I see on the website that people can order this product just for the shipping and handling, just the cost of shipping and handling. It's typically priced at $49.99, but all they have to pay is the shipping and handling. So I think everybody ought to do this, obviously.
Right, that's what I think. I'm just like, oh, my God, why wouldn't you want to do this? It's so incredible. And what I say to people is if you had 98% of the genetic material in every single person's cell is not organized into any coherent fashion. It cannot communicate with itself. And so only 2% of our genetic material is coherently organized into DNA. And, you know, and for the longest time, scientists said it was junk. And, you know, for whatever their reasons are, and I try not to speculate about those things because it no longer serves me. But, you know, what we've now, in September of this past year, 2012, in Europe, they had what was called the ENCODE study, and it was a group of 160 geneticists and bioengineering researchers and all kinds of people, doctors and everybody, get together from all over the world. And they finally said, hey, you know, that stuff we call junk is not junk. We figured out that it's signals and switches. And we figured out that what has to happen at this level and this level and this level and this level to achieve the organizing of this material into basically DNA. And so they're discovering what, you know, we've actually figured out. And you know, that's typical. I mean, you know, scientists bop around with all kinds of different stuff. But, you know, you just think about if you were a company and you had 100 employees and 98% of them were sitting at their desks. You know, they have the lights on. I mean, they have they're there with the capacity to work, but there's no communication. There's nobody bossing them around. And here's two employees that are clear about what they're supposed to do, but they're overworked. And so basically what the I-cell does is it goes in and it starts to boss around the 98. And the relief that comes to the other two from the 98 actually starting to do their job is so profound that people just kind of snap into a new space within inside of themselves. And there's all kinds of different, you know, effects from this product. But the main thing that is challenging to be able to communicate is that, you know, people will say, well, does it do this and does it do that? And I say, well, eventually it's going to do everything. How could it not? Because of the way it's designed. I mean, eventually it will complete the process of organizing your DNA. So,
shouldn't our DNA be able to organize itself? I mean, what did we do before this product came along?
Well, for a long time, we've done what we've done, which is to decline and decay and disease and die.
Okay.
I mean, for a long time, that's what we've done as a population of people. So, you know, I wasn't here prior to that experience. So I can only begin to, that's what I used to ask, because I had a scriptural reference that said that wasn't necessary. And I had a historical reference within the scriptures that said people lived a couple hundred years.
Sure. We do have a 3-minute break, so we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. All righty, welcome back. Our guest this first part of the program is Virginia Gunther, or Jenny Gunther. And the website is rnafreesample.com.
There you go. Yeah, so as we were saying, it's a mystery to, you know, both of us at one point to say, you know, why shouldn't our DNA just be able to put itself back together again, kind of like a Humpty Dumpty scenario? But the reality of it is, and I think a lot of your visitors are aware of the fact that, you know, we do live in an electric environment that seems to have an impeding effect on ourselves. And so there is some material necessary, which seems to be what is found in the eye cell. And it's basically a complex, a molecule, so to speak, that gives the new information to the RNA. RNA has to have a new frequency, a new signal, a new environment in which it can start to organize itself coherently. And so it requires something to kind of cause it to stand up and engage. And that's what the eye cell does. That is, you know, at the foundation of the RNA drops. So it's antidotal in a certain sense, that it provides an antidote to the electric conditions that we're in. And I know you said you've had Dr. Carolyn Dean on your show, and Carolyn's background is very unique in that, you know, she's MD and a naturopath, but her particular persuasion has led her to study the effects of electricity on the body as well. And so a lot of her work in the naturopathic and a healing world was to find an antidote that was sufficient for the causes of electricity and what it was doing with DNA. So,
these drops, the RNA drops, will counter the dangers and the threat from electric magnetic frequencies. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That is correct. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. From things like smart meters and cell towers and all the other, well, we do live in a magnet, in an electric universe.
We do.
But I
we
think
do.
That naturally we do, but I think the electricity that is being produced by man is of a different frequency. And I think that it is very dangerous, as you indicated.
Yes, that is correct. That is absolutely correct. That, you know, that electric frequency that we have in all our man-made technologies is, you know, and the thing of it is that I have had people say to me, well, I turn off my television, I don't carry a cell phone, and this and that, but, you know, we're, like you said, we're living in an electric world. I mean, those frequencies are running through our body. Because they're running through the air. They're running through our environment. So, yes, you can be more, determined to divorce yourself from it. But the reality is we're kind of like fish in the sea. We're swimming in an environment that we don't fully realize because we don't see it. Electricity and their effects are often unseen. So that was the exciting thing about the ability to bring forth this formula was that it was going to be an antidote. Well, it is an antidote to the electric environment and the electric conditions, and I think that's why people respond so rapidly and dramatically to it. And one of the things that seems to really improve quickly also is people's heart function. And we know that the heart is a particular magnetic environment and has a frequency of its own. And we've had two very stunning testimonies that people have shared about how one gal in particular was scheduled for a heart transplant and heard about the drops and decided to try the drops first. And she tried them in February of this year, and in November she was given a clean bill of health by her doctors. Another gentleman recovered 80% of his heart function. So when I look at things that positively impact at that level and degree of our cellular being, that's something that you can definitely pay attention to. So it's a very unique product, and there is a lot of education involved in bringing it forward to the public, because most people that do, as I did, you know, consider that, you know, if I feed my body different things, or if I try different types of food combinations. But I have been trying food combinations for, you know, almost 50 years, and I still hadn't been able to really toggle into that level of power that I now experience now in my being. It's a very different experience.
Okay. Excuse me. Now, this bottle, it's a 30-day supply, contains 90 drops, which would 3 drops a day.
Yep.
And what does the shipping and handling usually run?
The shipping and handling for the product is $18.99. We do ship it cold packaged, and we ship it priority mail. So when a person orders it, they're getting that goes all the time. So whenever we ship the RNA formula, we ship it cold packed and we ship it priority mail. So the bottle
is cold packed.
It's packaged cold. It comes with a cold pack in it.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a premium shipping cost involved, but the product itself, the small bottle, is valued at $49.99. And we started out by, you know, selling it at $49.99 and offering a money-back guarantee. And people were buying it and using it and having great results with it. And that gave us the confidence to say, no, you know, let's just offer a free sample. Let's just give it away.
Sure. Ginny, we do have a 3-minute break, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest this first part of the program is Virginia Gunther, or Ginny. The website is RNA Free Sample, all one word, rnafreesample.com. Okay, we're talking about what it could do for people, the fact that we live in a very toxic environment, that we have all these EMFs running around, and it has certainly debilitated many of us. And you're saying that RNA drops can help even people who've had heart issues. And you mentioned a couple people who started taking those drops and avoided surgery, which sounds very intriguing.
It's so neat to do this, Deanna, because this kind of reminds me of the advent of, say, the iPhone. You know, people have been using phones up until the iPhone, and when Apple introduced that technology into the marketplace, you know, people respond to it and said, oh, it's a phone, you know, it's a great phone, it's a fun phone. But then as the consumers started to engage it, they realized the versatility of it, and they kind of partnered up to basically make it what it is today, and then even create a demand for smartphones and all kinds of other things. So to me, this product is so unique. Our customers are almost like our partners. And they tell us what the formula can do, because other than the premise that is behind the formula, and the formula itself, I want to tell you people that it is 100% natural. The iCell is incubated and harvested through barley seeds. Very innocent products go into making this, you know, clover seeds and pepper seeds, and it's really the way the product is made that allows this eye cell to incubate and come forward. And in addition to that, because it is a living substance, it seems to be off like a torsion field or something that has its own life force impetus in it. And so it actually creates itself and creates itself as being even more powerful. And the way we were able to understand and delineate that information was because there have been people like myself who've been taking it for, you know, almost 2 years. And our, you know, my results on it were kind of gradual and building, and I've had some fantastic results from it. My boyfriend takes it. His children take it. In fact, we get to his 87-year-old father, who's a very staunch kind of British man. And we just said, look, take this. We didn't really even tell him why. We just said, take it. And so he took it for 5 months. And at in that time, at the end of the 5 months, he actually fell and broke his hip and had needed hip replacement surgery. Now, usually 87-year-old men do not recover from that kind of a fall. And he recovered in 3 months.
Interesting.
So that kind of power, we had it kind of building up. But now we see people who order the free sample bottle. Again, it's a 90-day supply. And they start to use the product. And they'll say, I think I feel better. I know I feel better. And then some people will say, I had this amazing thing that happened to me. And not everybody does that. But what we find is that as the people use it, we had a gal, Carolyn does a weekly health call. And that's one of the support mechanisms that we provide for people who order the free sample bottle. We don't just say, oh, here, order it and go on your merry way. We like to be involved and in relationship with people because we're fascinated with what this unique substance is doing. And so we had a gal on a call last night who had had back surgery, and she had been taking Vicodin every single day. And once she started taking the RNA drops, within 30, 45 days, she got herself off of Vicodin with absolutely no side effects, and her back pain is gone.
Great.
Now,
Jenny, I think we're going to take some calls.
Okay.
We have some callers, and that sounds wonderful that she was able to get off of Vicodin, which is a terrible drug. Let's take Joel in Wisconsin. Joel, welcome to the program.
Is the guest name Judy?
No, Jenny.
Jenny, okay. I have a suggestion, Jenny.
You
could give Deanna a bottle, shipping free, and just have her try it and have her respond back in 30 days, and I think you'll gain a customer.
Why
well,
do you think
I
you might gain a customer?
What?
I take supplements, you know. So,
well, yeah, well, what would you have to lose? I think Jenny would have something to gain, and then you would be reporting back for a free commercial, and, hey, what's anybody got to lose?
Well, I don't ever like to put anybody in a situation where they kind of feel like they're on the spot. I think that's a great suggestion.
Like now?
Well, I don't have any problem with it.
I'm a very strict regimen that Dr. Tennant has me on, and I don't think that I would, at this point in time, take other things outside of what he has me on, the protocol that he has me on.
Okay, well, it was a good idea.
Yes, no.
That sounds like a good idea.
And I'd like to say that my wife takes it. I don't take it myself, but my wife takes it, and she's been taking it for like 5 weeks, and... we approve of it highly.
Great.
Very nice.
I don't know if it's done anything that we can see otherwise. What it's done is taken her anxiety away. And for that reason alone, it's worth it.
Absolutely. And that is one of the main things that a lot of people report is the anxiety and stress. And it does make sense, again, going back to that idea that if you have 100 employees and only two of them are working, the two that are working are really stressed out. So when you come in and you start to give that life force energy to those other 98 and start to communicate with them and tell them what to do, the relief that comes in the body, mind, and emotions has been known to be demonstratively impactful to many, many people. So thank you for sharing that. That was great. Thank
yes.
you for sharing that very much. Appreciate
yes,
that.
Thanks, Joel.
One more thing. Is Jenny?
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here.
Was this worth another free bottle and not pay shipping?
Listen to you. Well, you know, the thing of it is that the shipping is what it is. You know, we had the product we feel does best when it's refrigerated. It is a life force energy that seems to be incubated in heart barley. It seems to do really well with the natural temperature of the earth. And so we've just kind of taken that stand. But, you know, finding a fulfillment center that does this kind of fulfillment that's not pharmaceutical is very challenging. So we had a company that actually requested, you know, accommodated all our requests, and it, you know, it definitely cost us a pretty penny. So we passed that on, but I cover all the costs of the bottles myself. So I'm already in partnership with you. I'm already in it. So I think that for $49.99 to get that kind of a deal, you're way ahead of the game. You'll enjoy it tremendously.
Well, it was worth a try, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Sure. Got to try. Absolutely.
Thanks,
okay.
Joel. Appreciate your phone call. All righty. So you said you're invested in the company? Jenny?
Very invested in the company, yes. It's not a multi-level company or anything like that. There are a group of us that are very passionate and empowered about this. And like I said, you know, with all of my human intervention experience, I watch the human condition. And I watch the hopelessness and the powerlessness of people when they had emotional, mental, physical challenges. And we're trying to remedy it through spiritual practices, which I don't have a problem with. I still use mine. But there does seem to be an additional kick that comes in a very dramatic fashion from feeding this kind of life force substance to our bodies. So I'm all about it. I've never endorsed a product before other than, you know, Mary Kay a bunch of years ago. But, I mean, I've never been doing this as a body of work. But in a way, it's a fulfillment for me of what I've sought for so many years.
Okay. And it helped all of your health issues or whatever health issues you happen to have?
Well, you know, fortunately, I didn't have a lot of health challenges. I've always been fairly healthy, but where my challenges really were in the mental, emotional world. I had some very unique experiences when I was a young girl that left me in a pretty, you know, I just had a lot of history. I had fears of abandonment and fears of rejection and childhood dramas that I couldn't get over, and I had done everything that I could and talked to everybody that I could, and it kind of kept me in a little bit of a box. So when I started using this formula, these things just started to go away. I mean, the neuropathic tendencies that we have to repeat pattern after pattern after pattern after pattern. And if you live in that kind of a pattern-based prison like I was living in, and, you know, like I said, I'm a high-functioning, articulate woman, but I was still very much limited by some of the emotional traumas that I dealt with as a child. And they all started to disappear. And I live in a place of joy and peace of mind that I did not even know was possible. And so for me, that was the additional validation and the power of the formula in my world, because of the emotional freedom that I received around using this product was amazing to me.
Good. Now, have you had a lot of response to your free bottle?
Oh, my gosh, yes. We've been so fortunate to be able to do this, and we've been fortunate to be able to negotiate with the all the people who are involved to offer this for free, and people who said, yes, I'll sign on and help invest in this to get it out to people. So we do actually, we're fortunate to ship, you know, hundreds of bottles a day, and they're going out all over the world, which is also exciting, too, to see people in Russia. I have people call me from Morocco, people calling from Europe, Canada. All over the world, we've gotten tremendous, tremendous response. So it's very exciting, absolutely.
Very interesting. All righty. Well, it's been very nice having you on the program, and good luck in your efforts. And so thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're so welcome, and thank you for having me. And anytime, you know, I just, like I said, I really appreciate and enjoy your show and what you do for your listeners. And to me, this is the kind of thing that is so easily shared in this kind of a forum, because you're just like, okay, this is interesting. Let's check it out. And I totally do appreciate your response, too, about what you said. You know, I'm using a protocol. I'm very satisfied with it. I'm just going to stick with that. And that's totally reasonable, too. So, and for other people who are looking for relief from, you know, mental, emotional things or whatever, check out the testimonies on my website. It's so encouraging to hear people use their own voice to speak their own mind. And as you know, you can't make claims anymore for anything. I mean, you know that. We can't claim this, claim, you know, otherwise you get in trouble with people. But people who use the product can definitely speak their mind about what it's done for them and the value that they place on it. And that's really exciting, too. So the website is rnafreesample.com. Lots of testimonies, people in their own voice sharing what this exciting technology is doing for them. So feel
okay,
free to visit.
It's not a multi-level marketing situation.
Oh, no, not at all. Nope, there's none of that going on. There's a handful of us who invested and said, yes, we'll do this, and this is what we want to kind of make our fulfillment of some of the things that we've all been working on. Again, Carolyn, her life's work has been this kind of bringing people relief and for their bodies, their minds, and their emotions. It's been my life's work. So it's more of a fulfillment, really, of our own particular unique journey. So, but it's not a multi-level company, not at all. And it's something that, like I said, we're just more than anything, we're just passionate about it. And we've gotten a great response from your listeners already. So thank you to everybody who's listening and responding. It's great. And if people go to my website, they can give me their name and email, and I will send them a 6-part audio video series that goes over even more details about how this has all come forward. And I take all my own phone calls. They can call me at 888-577-3703. I take phone calls. I talk to people all day long. So we're live people here doing this out of our passion. So
okay. All righty. Well, I appreciate you joining us today, as I said. And so take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, our second guest, who will join us hopefully momentarily, the board op called the phone and there's no answer, but our second guest is Zabeth Bain, Zabeth Bain, Bayne, and this is a woman who lives with her husband up in British Columbia, British Columbia, and they had a situation that began on June 3rd of 2001, and when they got married, she married her husband, Paul, and then they had children, and they kind of had a nightmare, which is in which the government of British Columbia took part. They actually took their children away and decided that they were not going to give the children back. And she's going to come on and tell her story and what happened. They actually had three children, two sons, age 5 and 4, and a 2-year-old daughter. And these children were apprehended by the government on October 22nd, 2007, because the couple was suspected of shaking the small girl, causing her a head injury. Now, this was, you know, of course, the government should protect children, but there's so many other reasons why a child would be injured. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen to children, such as vaccines, that can cause a lot of multiple damages, and often the parents are blamed for it. And sometimes we hear of sudden infant death, And this is attributed to vaccines. And it usually happens within just a very short period of time after an infant has been vaccinated. Zaybeth does have a blog site, and that blog is Fighting Unjust Social Service Ethics.blogspot.com. And I hope that she will join us momentarily. Okay, she's ready to go. All righty. She will be with us just after we come back from the break. Be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest in the second part of the program is Zaybeth Bain. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really, really excited to be here today. Thank you.
Am I pronouncing your first name correctly?
Zaybeth.
Okay. All righty. Yeah. Okay. Tell us your story. We're going to a break in about 3 minutes, but let's give us your story.
Okay, in 3 minutes, yeah. It was about 4 years worth. But yeah, I can give you how it
just
started.
Just introduce how it started, here. And then we'll pick it up in the next hour.
Yeah, basically in September of 2007, we had a 3-week-old baby girl, and I had fed her and placed her on a blanket in our living room floor and gone out to express more milk. But basically when I came out of the bedroom, I saw our second child, our boy, coming around the corner. He was a little toddler, and he was kind of doing a stumbly run, and he fell on me, tripped and fell, and I saw his head go down on top of her head. It was an impact injury there, and, you know, everything froze for me there, but she was whimpering a little bit. I assumed, you know, like that would have caused a problem for her. There was some damage done, but she wasn't really crying a lot. But later on, I noticed a change in her. She dropped her feeds dramatically, and then within a couple, 3 days, she started to vomit, and she wasn't holding any food down, and she had kind of a scary glazed look in her eyes. And we rushed her to emergency, and she had choked, and she wasn't breathing. And that started us on 3 weeks of trying to get medical assistance, because she was getting dehydrated, she was vomiting, she wasn't asking for food, and they just kept saying she's constipated or she has reflux until, I mean, her head grew 6 centimeters because it was actually bleeding inside. And they finally did the CT scan and an MRI, and they saw that she had internal bleeding, but it had swelled 6 centimeters before they finally put a tube in and drained the blood. But in that amount of time, you know, that's a lot of swelling. And the doctor at Vancouver Children's Hospital then came with this diagnosis that it was shaken baby syndrome. And we were, oh, my God. At first, I didn't know what that was and what that entailed, but I knew no one had shaken her. And we had explained, you know, this incident that occurred with our child. And, you know, they would just shake their heads and say no. They came with a diagnosis of abuse and did not investigate the validity of, you know, this accidental injury at all.
Now, so your son, now how old is your son? He was 2?
Yeah, he was just over 2, yeah.
Okay. And when did you take her to the hospital? When you started noticing that she was having some symptoms?
Yeah, but she had stopped breathing because she had vomited, and that was just a horrific ordeal. Just noting your baby's not breathing, she's turning blue, and fortunately we weren't that far from the hospital. It was quicker for us to drive there. But she was unresponsive, and that was one of the most scary times in our lives. But sadly, we were sent home after a couple hours of monitoring. So, yeah.
All righty. We do have our top of the hour 60-second break. We will be right back with our guest today on the other side of the hour. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest, the second part of the program, is Zaybeth Bain, and I have a link to her story on the schedule page. And so please pick up where you left off. You took the baby to the hospital. You lived fairly close to the hospital. And I know that when you have small children, that, I mean, things happen. And certainly accidents do happen. And usually it doesn't, it's inconsequential. But apparently this was not. And yet the people at the hospital, the doctor, did not believe you, which is horrible. Why would they not believe you?
Apparently there was no outward signs of injury on our baby. And I was actually... I was laughed at by one particular hospital here when we went into the emergency because, you know, we spent 3 weeks after that initial trip to the hospital with the not breathing incident going back seeking help to medical clinics and then to other hospitals. And, you know, like I said, I was laughed at once over the incident saying, you know, this wouldn't cause any damage in a baby. And I don't see any outward damage, so she must be constipated or just has reflux. And they put her on some medication to control reflux, and that didn't help because obviously that wasn't the problem. But what's scary is that a parent can go into the hospital for an emergency with their child and walk out having a finger pointed at you saying you abused your child. And then what's even worse is the child who has a medical issue spends, like ours, 3 weeks in not getting it attended to. She could have died. Her head was swelling 6 centimeters and nobody would listen. And these are our doctors and medical professionals. So it was just really scary to have that happen and to not get treatment for her. So, but yeah, and then after we finally got at the end of 3 weeks and I noticed the bleeding in her head, shaken baby syndrome, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're facing police interrogation. We were arrested. You're facing, you know, social workers removing other children from your family, and you're being monitored. You know, you can't see your baby alone, and it's very, very invasive. And when are you left with time to, you know, worry about your daughter and what happened to her, rather than defending these allegations? It's just the whole system is. It was a wide awakening to us.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Bethany was born on August 3rd, 2007. She was 2 months old when this happened. I mean, things do happen when you have other children. Things happen. And the fact that they did not attend to her is also very deplorable. I mean, you obviously, she had some issues, and I don't know how they could attribute her not being able to breathe to being constipated. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Yeah, well, she had vomited. So they figure there was vomit, you know, that had blocked her air passage, and they just attribute it then to reflux and constipation. And they're treating the reflux, and they were treating the constipation, giving her, you know, a baby enema. But that wasn't the problem. And in fact, we found out that retinal bleeding and the brain hemorrhaging can also occur if there's very harsh vomiting and coughing, and that can produce pressure in the head. So here she already has a bleed, plus she's vomiting heavily for 3 weeks. So, I mean, to me, all of this just compounded her problem.
Oh, absolutely. Not receiving the proper medical attention certainly did a lot, and that's very invasive treatment to begin with, and they gave her pharmaceutical drugs?
Yes, yeah.
All righty, we do have a 3-minute break. We will be right back, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest, the second part of the program, is Beth Bain. And now this story, it's in several parts. It's a 17-part article that talks about this and what happened and how the government seized your child. And it is just amazing to me. So go ahead and continue.
Yeah, we had 3 children at the time. And after the allegations came from the pediatric child abuse pediatrician at the Children's Hospital, the social services stepped in and they removed our baby, Bethany, but she still had to stay at the hospital. She was recovering. And then our two boys, who were two or three at the time, the social services also removed them. They were with Grandma and Grandpa at the time, and they came to their house, and we weren't there, and tried to remove them out of the home as well, but the Grandpa refused, and eventually they relented, and they left our two boys there. But we had no access to our boys and hospital access under supervision with our baby. And then while she was still in the hospital, we ended up being arrested by the police here and interrogated for a day before they released us that evening. And that in itself was another horrific experience for us. While, you know, your baby's suffering in the hospital, to be sitting in a jail cell for half a day and then the other half of the day being interrogated. I mean, it was so bad that they ended up calling an ambulance for me because my whole body had seized and was going numb and had just twisted just with the stress and the treatment there. So just, it was incredible. And then, you know, we spent a few weeks without any access to our boys as well. And, you know, never having been away from our children or having had a sitter, we were just beside ourselves. You know, what do we do? It was a whole new world for us that we didn't realize could happen to someone.
And of course, the boys were traumatized by this entire incident also.
Oh, incredibly so. And we went to the media before when we just weren't making any headway. We actually had to seek out, I was researching what is shaken baby syndrome, and I found out there's a big controversy over this. There's so many other issues that can actually mimic shaken baby syndrome, you know, even bleeding disorders and birth trauma. And as you were saying when you opened the show, you know, vaccines, there's so many things, and accidental head trauma, which is what it was in our case, that we had to seek out experts to do a review. And social services did not want us to have that done, so we had to do it, you know, on our own. Getting disclosure was another story. But basically, on our child's birthday, they decided to remove from the grandparents as well, and they came and traumatized our children with two police officers and two social workers. And, you know, the grandparent was there for his grandson's birthday too, and they removed their children under force, and they were screaming and crying. It was the worst experience. And to this day, our children are scared if they see a police officer, and if someone knocks on the door, you know, they're wondering. They hope it's not social services. They hope it's not a policeman. Don't let anyone take us away. It's something that's carried on for many, many months afterwards. And, you know, that was 4 years ago. So it was very traumatizing for them.
Now, you have socialized medicine in Canada. Now, did you know the doctor that initially saw Bethany when you took her to the hospital? Had what kind of medical care, if any, was she exposed to before this incident? She was only 2 months old. Had she seen?
Oh yes. She was. We had a pediatrician involved with her. You see, I give birth prematurely to most of my babies, and Bethany was born premature as well. So she was following up with our pediatrician as well as our family doctor. So she did have regular care and the well baby checkups with the public health nurse. So, you know, she was being cared for, monitored. She didn't have any huge issues, just prematurity. So, you know, you're watching for developmental issues with her.
And did your pediatrician step in at any time and say, look, I know these people. They would not have done this. Was he helpful at all?
Actually, it was our family doctor that was very helpful. She stepped in and called social services, vouched for us, told them, you know, that something's wrong here, that she's followed us. Even before we had the children, she was my family doctor. And she said, this is impossible. This did not happen this way. And you know, they didn't put any weight on what she had said. She also, after they removed, she also conducted a full physical on all the children. And, of course, there was no findings with that. They were just premature. So, yes, they were smaller because they were premature babies. But they were developing just fine and normally, considering that. And she also did a media interview with Global TV that had first run our story and vouched for us on the report there, too. But it didn't have any effect on social services. They have made their diagnosis, and instead of, they start with the presumption of guilt, and they're working backwards, if they work at all, with that. They make their case based around that diagnosis. And we were told, you know, they couldn't work with us until our story was consistent with the story or the diagnosis of their diagnosing doctor, which was shaken baby syndrome. And so we couldn't get anywhere. We were butting heads. We couldn't confess to something we didn't do. So because of that, they wouldn't work with us. And basically, we were in denial, you know? So what a frustrating position. And this is what we're finding with parents, because our story has gotten out there, that parents are contacting us. I noticed you're referring to one of my older websites. We do have a new one. It's evidence-based medicine and socialinvestigation.org. And parents write in there that are going through exactly what we have gone through, even with brittle bone diseases and such. These hospitals are diagnosing abuse, and the police are interrogating as if you're guilty and not innocent. And the social workers are removing, and they stand by their diagnosing doctor. They don't do proper unbiased investigations.
Amazing. Give us that website again. Evidence-based medicine
and social investigation.
Okay.
.org.
Okay. All one word. Okay. I'll be sure and link that on today's schedule page. Now, the doctor that first saw Bethany at the hospital, was there just one doctor, or was there another opinion that contributed to this faulty diagnosis?
When we first went in with that emergency, it was just the acting emergency doctor there that had just diagnosed, looked at her symptoms. He put monitors on her, flipped her feet, and she started breathing again. He had given her oxygen, and she stayed there for a couple of hours. They sent us home. I was back again that same night because she was unresponsive. She wasn't moving her limbs. I gave her a cool bath. Nothing was working. And then they transferred us to another hospital. One doctor saw her there. They didn't do a CT scan and MRI until almost 3 weeks later. So many doctors saw her. Yeah, when we finally got the CT scan and MRI done, I mean, there is a pediatric radiologist that's looking at, they have a scan team where they have an ophthalmologist looking at the eyes, they have, you know, a radiologist doing the x-rays. They do all their testing, which actually they omit a lot of valuable tests that could determine differential diagnosis. And the child abuse pediatrician then takes that information and says, well, this fits in with shaken baby syndrome, or this child has been abused. They have so many amount of broken bones, but they don't do deep enough testing before they point a finger and say, this is abuse. So there is a scan team that's usually involved with these cases.
Amazing. Now, you are going to have a conference in 2013?
Yeah, it will be our third conference, yeah.
Now, I'm sure this happens a lot. I'm sure that that it happens in the United States. And I'm trying to figure out, is this an effort on the government's part to assume responsibility for children? Are they making these claims so that they can take custody of children? What do you think is behind their agenda?
That's a broad question. I think there's a few answers to that, and there's different motivation behind it as well. I mean, in some cases, I believe that you do have social workers and a hospital staff that truly care about these children, and you have cases that are literally very abusive, that, you know, children have to be removed for their protection, and they have to do investigations and prosecute criminally, you know, any acts of abuse against the child. I do know that there are budgetary demands that they have in the hospitals. They have X amount of dollars, and they have to have X amount of, you know, cases or work done for those, that budget, and, you know, then they can apply for a bigger budget the next year. I mean, that can be another motivation. Depending on the country as well, I mean, in the UK, I know it's even worse. I mean, we had it better here than, I mean, you guys have it and the UK has it in these situations. But, I mean, there's a lot of people that want to adopt. I know in some places they do get money for her removal. There's bonuses. Like I said, it's a broad question. That I'm not familiar with all the answers for that question, but I do believe that there's a lot of different motivation and corruption that's involved in this type of industry.
All righty. We are going to break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our second guest is Zabeth Bain. And her website is evidence-based medicine and social investigation, all one word, .org. And you brought up a very interesting point. You were talking about adoptions and that the hospital, given their diagnoses, would get more money for their budget if they diagnosed perhaps more things that required extra care, extra tests, extra things that usually cost money. And I kind of thought about the organ harvesting industry as you were talking about this. And I think what you're saying or implying is that there's a profit motive behind making these false accusations.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the budget, yes, I would say there is profit in both medical and social service industries in having these allegations. And if I could just branch out from there as well, referring back to our case, the costs involved in prosecuting our case in family court, even in the foster care system, when a doctor makes this diagnosis, you've got a child that needs special care, and here, I mean, there's different levels of foster care, and they get different amounts of funding for that. So they diagnose these children. Sometimes there's just mental diagnosis rather than, you know, physical injury, and they're in different levels of care, which in turn brings in more budget for them and more profit for them. So, and in our case as well, I mean, that's, they need a budget for supervisors to do the visitations and level three care for all the children, and then the legal costs involved, plus they're bringing in extra specialists in a medical case like this. They flew one in from Florida in our case, and, you know, just to look at the file, I mean, they're costing at least $10,000 for that, but they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in our case, all in all, with every branch of funding that they needed. It was a vast amount of taxpayers' money that was completely unnecessary, because look at where we are today, and all three, and then we had another baby, four children are back in our care again. And the verdict came back that it was not shaken baby syndrome. So it's an incredible amount of taxpayers' money that is just wasted.
You could also apply this to the school system, wherein they diagnose so many children with ADHD and ADD, and it's all about money, and it's also all about putting all of these children on these horrible, horrible pharmaceutical drugs that just alter and damage them terribly. And I think you could also compare this to the fact that many judges are on the take, and they will put people in prison so that they can exploit the labor situation and use these prisoners, nonviolent prisoners, for manufacturing goods. I mean, this is terrible.
Yeah, it parallels into all branches of government and as well. It's actually, I just refer to it as an international epidemic, because in all countries, you know, we get pleas for assistance, And the story is the same everywhere, and the motivation behind it seems to be the same everywhere as well. But, it's an international epidemic for sure.
And by making the accusation, now they could have certainly helped Bethany, could have treated her. You would have taken her home if they had been, if they had been qualified doctors, if they had just done their job, they could have solved the problem immediately, and you would not have gone through all of this, and of course the taxpayers wouldn't have had to pay for all of the money that went to special doctors, special agencies. It seems like they're just creating the problem in order to create a profit stream.
That's well put. Yeah, that's exactly very well put. But as you said, I mean, instead of, they do a bare minimum testing in the hospitals. And one of the ophthalmologists I had spoken with that was looking into our case, you know, said the ophthalmologist will just do a quick look at it. They'll say, oh, retinal bleeding, the shrinking baby syndrome, it was abused, and they want to just get back to the surgery or other things. I mean, this is they simplify it and they rush to a diagnosis that's easy rather than going through all the multitude of testing to actually get to the root of the problem. I mean, and you have children that could be, you know, the bruising that can be, different types of bruising can be mistaken for abuse when there's actually different disorders or disease a child may have. Even lack of vitamin K shot as well can cause that. And children that are born prematurely, you'll see a lot of bone issues with them. And to me, it would seem, I mean, I had a 24.5-week baby born who had osteopenia prematurity. You'd think that, because it's common knowledge that children born under 5 pounds or children born under term, naturally, they all have some sort of bone disease. They have rickets, vitamin D deficiency. They don't have the last part of the movement in the mother's womb for the last 3 months to build their bones and grow strength. And these kids are fracturing in the hospitals just having their diapers changed. And, you know, what's going on? Why don't they investigate this farther?
Exactly. All right, we are going to break. We'll be back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Beth Bain, and her website is evidence-based medicine and social investigation.org. And you help people who have had these false allegations made against them. Have a lot of people, a lot of couples come to your website and ask for help or told their stories to you?
There's almost daily we get requests for help, and it's very appalling, you know, just how often this is happening. And the cases that come to us, they're not isolated by the borders. They come from the UK and the US and throughout Canada for the most part. We had one request for help from Norway, but it's mostly the other three areas that are writing for help. And basically what we're doing, like, our focus is to hold conferences in order to bring, you know, the different professionals that we're hoping to reach them that are diagnosing these cases of abuse and make them very, very aware of the quantity of times that the parent or caregiver is actually innocent, and aware of the differential diagnosis and the testing that should be done and could be done in order to, you know, rule out and figure out if it is abuse or, you know, if it's something else and this child needs different medical attention. And so what we do outside of the conferencing, I mean, we bring parents to the conferences as well to connect them to those experts. But the letters that come to us, we basically act as a bridge. We work with the lawyers to provide them with the current medical research on the subjects of like Munchausen's by proxy, shaken baby syndrome, brittle bone diseases, and we'll give them that information as well as look through the case and the diagnosis and symptoms and injuries and connect them to the medical experts that they'll need to conduct those reviews So we kind of coordinate all of that and act as a bridge there and an emotional support for these families because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that may not have as much support from the family or the friends that they thought they'd have once a finger has been pointed at them, that an abuse or a criminal act has been committed against the child. And we just try to be there and build a network around them and connect them with others that have gone through this to give them some support to get through this because it's one of the worst times in your life to have a child sick, needing medical care, not getting it, to be separated from your child and facing legal action that could permanently remove you from, you know, your little ones. And so that emotional support is so vital. So that's in a nutshell, that's basically what we try to do through that website. And we have another sister site. And we do have some wonderful people that are working with us with that. We just took on three more directors. So we have Charlene Hira, who's an emergency surgical nurse from Manitoba, Canada. We also have Matthew Seeley, who's a legal professional from Utah. And Anne Bernardo, who's a legal nurse consultant from Pennsylvania. She works with the law offices of Mark Freeman. And they take on a lot of these cases. Another excellent lawyer that is working with us is Zachary Bravos. And I believe on their website, Zachary Bravo's website, you can also take a look at Illinois Bar Association published an article on this. It's called A Critical Look at Shaken Baby Syndrome. So both of those, there's a lot of good information on their websites as well. And, of course, all the doctors and experts that are working with us and with other projects in trying to uncover, you know, the truth. Is this an abuse case or has this been misdiagnosed? And they'll work with the legal counsel and review these medical files, and where it's they're finding it, it's just endless, the quantity of people that have been falsely accused and have lost, you know, their most valuable possession, the family.
Oh my. All righty. We do take callers. Let's take Werner from Canada. Werner, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, good afternoon to your guest. And I feel so sorry about that there are so many people that are being abused by a system that actually should protect us. Are you familiar with the case of Daniel and Jennifer Fitzgerald?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that case.
A few years ago, Daniel Fitzgerald, he started writing a book exposing corruption within the RCMP and the connection with organized crime, and it happened in British Columbia. They had to leave British Columbia and move to Ontario, and their children were being removed in order to get them to shut up. And one child was even removed within hours after Mrs. Fitzgerald had given birth to it.
Oh, my.
Terrible.
Yeah. And you mentioned about the diagnosis by the doctor about shaken baby syndrome. There, several years back in Ontario, there was a pathologist, and he got disgraced, Dr. Charles Randall Smith, and he testified in court cases against people, against parents that had been accused of having physically abused their children. And it came out that he was completely unqualified. So a lot of those cases, they got reversed, and the judicial system had to take a sober second look at it.
Yeah, well, I'm familiar with that case. Yeah.
And in here in New Brunswick, in Fredericton, it happened, I don't know, about 6-7 years ago. There was a case, too. There was a family. I think they came from India. And there was a certain genetic condition, and it was falsely diagnosed, and they removed the children from that family.
Amazing.
Where they got, you know, hemorrhaging underneath the skin, and the social workers, you know, in their eager, you know, to, you know, get more clients under their tutelage. They made up a story, so the children were removed, but then, you know, it was recognized, and they had to back off.
Well, thank you so much, Werner, for sharing. I was kind of curious. Have you ever done a study of the history of child abuse or these cases? before and after the social services took effect, or socialized medicine took effect?
I understand there are statistics when children have been removed and given from their parents and given in foster care, they have 6 times more the likelihood of being sexually abused.
Yikes.
And then there is another aspect what your guest mentioned there. It is a money racket, and it is a gravy train and a meal ticket for all those useless bureaucrats.
Right. Sebastian, what about the history before and after social services became an agency?
I actually haven't done personally any study with that. I'm familiar with all the medical side of this type of a case. But I do know that there's another organization in Canada that assists parents and does a lot of research into that. And that group is called PAPA. It's Parents Assisting Parents Association. And if your listeners wanted to go on their website, there's a lot of information there that would be relevant to your question right now that they could look for.
Okay. Do you know that website? What is the website? Do you know?
It's Parents Assisting Parents Association.
Okay. All righty.
And you have one of your guests there on RBN, Dr. Carly, you know?
Uh-huh.
Anybody who becomes a whistleblower, they become a target for those so-called children protective services.
Right. Okay,
and I think the system is so corrupt. There are so many corrupt elements that have found their way into the system and at the feeding troughs. And it is high time that the cases get exposed and those perpetrators get kicked out of there and held legally responsible.
Right. Well, the spoil system has always been a part of government, whether you're talking about U.S. History, whether you're talking about Canadian, the bureaucracy up there. But anyway, it's always been a spoil system, and it's used to exploit the citizens. So thank you so much for your call, Werner. We do have some other calls.
You're welcome.
So,
thank you.
Tammy in Arizona. Sabeth, did you have some comments you'd like to make before I take another call?
Hello?
No, I just wanted to refer you to the other website there. That was good. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Tammy, welcome.
Yes. Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
My son has fallen into the cracks of the injustice system. And it's good to know there are organizations out there that are fighting for truth and justice. But with my son's case, the coroner actually lies about the cause of death of the child he tried to save. And I do have medical backup. One expert that was at trial and then another expert that... was able to give a report stating that the coroner is misleading. I was wondering if evidence-based medicine and social investigation, do you work with innocence projects?
We're connected to. We have access to refer cases to them. One of the lawyers from the Innocent Project, Catherine Jepson, she actually assists us with helping us with referrals and advising legal counsel that comes to us to help in these cases. So we're part of the network.
Okay. I wonder, because the Innocence Project is investigating my son's case at this time, they haven't committed to it yet. I was wondering if I could refer them maybe to you, or they probably already have your information.
Well, if you're working with an Innocence Project already, they would have the most up-to-date information.
Okay.
But you could feel free to browse our website, because we actually have a link on our website to a sister site where we have a lot of medical research papers that you can download, and you can look through. And if you're not sure which would be applicable to your case, you could write me emails on both of the websites, and you could send me an email or any of my directors. Like I said, if you're already with an Innocence Project, which Innocence Project are you with? There are a few.
It's Northern Arizona.
Okay. We're actually with Keith Findlay and the Medill Innocence Project. We get a lot of information from them, and they send us, you know, the latest up-to-date information. So you could direct them to the website, or you could write me, and we could connect you to Catherine Judson, which is another lawyer that works with the Innocence Network, if you wanted more advice from her.
Okay. Catherine Jackson.
Judson, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, thank you for your time, and, you know, blessings to you and all the people that work with you. There's so much injustice, and it's just the corruption to have convictions, and I think there's a tail end for payoffs and money for the state, you know, with no regards to human life.
Indeed.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your help and your referrals. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All righty. Let's take Dan in Oregon. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yes. Thank you for accepting the call. I guess the question I ask is that the speaker, your speaker talked about abuse, but she never used the term neglect. Does neglect come into play, or is it strictly abuse?
Oh, no, it's neglect as well. We have cases where there's no medical evidence of abuse. It could be mental or emotional, or it could be cases where they've been charged with neglect of a child and they're facing losing the child as well.
I have found in the past that schools are getting into the game. That is, the more special ed students they have, the more money they get, and very often, not all the time, they try to manipulate the Child Protective Services to go into court to take custody of the child and place the child in some other environment on their rationale that if the child is in a different environment, it will improve educationally compared to the home. Would you like to comment on that?
I'm sorry, could you rephrase the question? You're saying that the schools are getting involved?
What I'm saying is sometimes I've noticed in the high schools, or schools per se, if they can label a child a special needs child by education, they get extra funding from the federal government to the school. And sometimes... And sometimes the school tries to manipulate the... Child Protection Services to take custody of the child under neglect, not so much abuse, as to placing them into a different home, saying that if they were in a different environment, the child would be better educated. And I was just asking for your comment. Is this a common factor, or is it just kind of situational?
No, it's very common. The schools do get funding, different program funding for different children. If they label them as special needs in different areas, then they'll get funding for the programs for those special areas. One problem that we have here is when, let's say, a parent has a child that does need some extra funding and does have special needs, the government won't give them the money in the home to support the special needs. They will actually remove the child and place them in a different home in order to get the funding to the child. And, you know, we've heard parents signing over their rights of the child agreeing to put them in care so that the child can get funding. It's why not provide that funding necessary in the home? Why do you have to remove a child? And then, you know, there's more tax money going into that. You're paying the care home now. But, yeah, there is, they do get funding for the different programs and labeling the child special needs in different areas, yeah.
Well, the next question I have is that, you know, when you use the term abuse in regards to the child being in danger and compared to neglect, if these charges are there, how much does it depend on the social aspect of the family? That is, does the family, you know, if it shows tendency towards neglect or abuse, it's a negative fact, but what happens if they don't and they still come down with the expert's opinion that this child is at abuse or in danger?
Yeah, you know, usually, like I said, there's a presumption of guilt. Once a social worker makes that removal for abuse or neglect, they build their case around that. Even if you have a good social history, I mean, my family and I had an excellent social history. There's no drugs. There's no neglect. It was excellent. We were always taking our kids, you know, to the proper experts for medical follow-up. But still, they had to build their case around that. So it didn't matter that the evidence pointed to good quality care in the home. They're still going to build that case.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Sabeth Bain, and her website is linked on today's radio schedule page. And we do have some other callers. So Dan, I'm going to let you go. Did you have another comment or question real quick?
Yeah, really too, is that the system, that is the court system, when it comes to child protection, usually in the old days they had a probable cause hearing to see if you had enough information or evidence to take the child, and then you had an adjudication hearing whether you can have the child up to 2 years in state custody. And it seems like in a lot of the states they combine these two, so when they go in the court and they take the child for 2 years rather than they use both as adjudication hearing and skip one, and you know, it kind of short circuits the court as well as the rights of the parents. The second question, real quick, is this. Is there, in your caseloads that you look at, is there a marked distinction between people who live in the rural areas compared to people who live in the urban areas? On that note, I'll say thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, Dan. Sabeth?
Yes. You know, the cases that come to us, I know the stats when you're dealing with shaken baby syndrome, they tend to say, you know, lower income families, et cetera, they have more, they readily more abuse or neglect the child. But we actually get quite a variety of backgrounds, social history backgrounds, financial levels. It doesn't seem to be, you know, biased towards one or the other on the cases that we actually see. It's just the problem in all families in general if you have a child.
Okay, thank you. Let's take Sunny real quick from Idaho. Sunny, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks, Deanna. Real quickly, back in Bill Clinton's second term, Mary Madeline had a radio show, and she was going berserk one day. My husband and I heard her talking about Bill Clinton had just signed into law, I think it was an executive order, that in order for Child Protective Services to get federal funding each year, they had to double the number of children removed from homes the previous year. And we could not believe it. I mean, run the numbers. That's exponential. And we looked it up, and it was for real, that every year they have to double the number of children removed from the home from the previous year in order to get their federal funding. And then we wonder why this is happening. Anyway, just a quick one, hon.
Thanks, honey.
Thanks.
In the chat room, DCF is a private corporation for profit. Okay, we do have one more caller, Lisa in Canada. Lisa, welcome to the program. Real quick, we're running out of time.
Hello, Zabeth. I'm sorry to hear that you had to go through all this atrocities with the medical profession and social services to prove your innocence. In our family went through something similar with shaken baby syndrome. It's been a long time to get over it. In fact, I don't know if we'll ever get over it. How do you handle the stress of of going through this, and do you feel that it's always going to be there in the back of your mind, and do you worry about the future and the possibilities of social services coming around again?
Lisa and Beth, I want you two to contact each other, please. Thank you, Lisa, for calling in, and thank you, Beth, for being on the program and sharing your story. We have run out of time. Bless you, bless your family, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Good to be here. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. And Lisa, please contact Beth. Go to her website.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have